You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, we'll look at how the Department of Housing and Urban Development is doing under the new secretary, Dr. Ben Carson. First, in the United States, an estimated 78 million dogs and 85.8 million cats are kept as pets in the United States. People call themselves parents of their pets and post pictures of their pet children on social media. At the same time, research is showing that animals from goldfish to elephants have surprisingly rich emotional and social lives. In New Zealand, pets are no longer considered property, but in certain legal ways, sentient beings. In the U.S., pets are still property, but 32 states, along with D.C. and Puerto Rico, include provisions for pets under domestic violence protection orders. Our next guest writes that ethicists are starting to raise the question, is it ethical for people to own animals as pets? Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie is a freelance journalist and the author of the book Princesses Behaving Badly, Real Stories from History Without the Fairy Tale Endings. She wrote about the ethics of having pets in The Guardian. Linda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, why are some people, including some ethicists, starting to rethink whether it's right or wrong to have pets?
Well, I think the central question is, especially as we start to consider pets more and more part of our families, that the more you sort of humanize animals, the more it becomes morally problematic to continue to keep them bound to us in ways that we don't really know if they even want. And you know, so there's also, I think, on another level, some ethicists are concerned about how the pet industry is sort of how it works, and what the kind of, you know, collateral damage that the pet industry encourages, you know, from not only from sort of, you know, puppy farms and puppy mills and places like that, but also the sort of, you know, food that they have to eat. Some people keep rats as pets, but other people need to use those rats to feed their snakes. And things like that, that just start to make the whole thing feel a little bit uncomfortable.
And what kind of changes have we seen over the years in how we humans, in the United States in particular, think about our animals and our pets in particular?
Well, certainly we've become more, to some degree, and this might not be sort of a nice word to use, but more sentimental about them. You know, certainly within the last 50 years, even the number of people who report allowing their pets to sleep in the same bed with them has risen dramatically. Pets in the bedroom, you know, that really is kind of a newish thing. And, you know, even 100 years ago, having a pet dog, you know, people did have it, but it wasn't, they didn't occupy quite the same sort of niche that pets do now. And, you know, there's a ton of evidence that shows that even, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, people are considering their pets more and more members of their family. And this is a very sort of explicit thing. Now, a lot of the research that says that is coming from the pet industry. At the same time, you know, looking at anything from Instagram to your social media feed, you know, lots of people have pets and lots of people are very vociferous about how much they love them. So you do get a sense that people at least believe that they're treating their animals more like family members.
And you wrote, I mean, it seems like we used to be more unsentimental even about our pets. You wrote about examples, I think, 50 years ago of people going on vacation and instead of, you know, boarding the dog or figuring out what to do, they might have the pet put down and just replace them later.
Yeah.
That is not, that'd be hard to imagine today.
Absolutely. I mean, that's absolutely shocking. I mean, certainly, you know, looking back with the historical remove on, you know, the farmer in 1698 who killed his dog and baked him for his fat, because the dog had sort of outlived its usefulness at that point. You know, that's a while ago, and you can think like, right, well, people are thinking differently about it now. But even in the 1960s, to have people doing things like that is a little bit, that's a bit close to home. And I think what it shows to some degree is that pet keeping in the way we're doing it now is a relatively new phenomenon. Now, I know that people are going to quibble with this because there's been, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, in particular with dogs, about, you know, how long it's been that we've domesticated them and things like that. But I think I would argue that the way pets occupy our lives now is in a different position than they did even in the 1960s. You know, even what they were then is different to what we say they are now.
We're talking to Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie about an article she wrote in The Guardian looking at some people, some ethicists in particular, raising the question, is it right for humans to own pets as property? You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Weigh in on this as an ethical issue. Share your story as well. Linda, one of the tricky things here, some of the ethicists you wrote about talk about, you know, animals' autonomy. And I think people might think about animals' happiness. It seems like it'd be hard to measure any of those. These are all kind of human categories, and we're trying to think of how they relate in an animal frame of mind. Is that part of one of the challenges here?
It is one of the challenges, but it's interesting because we have a lot more, we have many more tools available now to be able to assess that in ways. I mean, in particular, I'm thinking of the neuroscientist who basically studied his dog's brain in an fMRI and found so much more than he really thought that he was going to find to begin with. And that was back in 2013. And he wrote an article, an op-ed for the New York Times, claiming dogs are people too. And, you know, increasingly when we start to look at animal behavior, we're seeing a much more evidence of a kind of rich and varied inner life than I think we would have thought before. And certainly, you know, having kind of taken for granted what that's like for them. I mean, you know, looking at turtles love iPads, which is a weird thing, but it's true. And, you know, so do wolves, so do penguins. And the interactions that animals are capable of having and the emotions that they're capable of having, I think we're only now sort of getting to understand. Now, certainly there is concern about reading that in more human ways, anthropomorphizing that. Sizing that in ways that might be sort of detrimental to the animal and to how we understand them, you know, implying that dogs feel shame or that, you know, your cat's like, you know, my cat has, I have a cat. I have to come clean about that. We have a pet. Mm-hmm. But you know, in he's famous for when I am getting on calls with people to start knocking off things from the counter. And it's hard to think that like he doesn't know, but I'm pretty certain he's not doing it just to irritate me, like, you know, or you know, to make me look bad or anything like that. I mean, because he's still, you know, he's still a cat. Like, so when it comes to kind of moral behaviors and things like that, you know, you don't want to go too far with it. But it is clear that animals are capable of much, much more than we thought. And I think that brings with it a load of moral questions that we need to ask. I mean, you know, a particularly poignant area to think about, or an animal in particular, are pigs. You know, we know that pigs are capable of empathy. They're capable of knowing that they're about to be killed, and yet the primary, and they make great pets. You know, they're big and kind of smelly, but they make great pets. And you know, the main reason why we like them to eat them is because they taste good. Now, I'm not a vegetarian. I do eat pigs, but I have to sort of start considering these things. I think that, you know, the more we know about their lives, the more uncomfortable it is to treat them as commodities.
But I think a lot of people, and even just reading the comments section for the article you wrote, would say, you know, maybe there are these moral gray areas, but a pet is pretty well off. They're fed, they're in a comfortable way of life, they're not about to be killed and eaten, and they're not out in the wild getting diseases or eaten by other animals. So can we, I guess, just do that sort of cost-benefit analysis?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. And I do think, you know, there are a lot of people who are saying things like, you know, you'll take my dog's lead from my cold dead hands. And I thought, like, actually that's really awful for the animal.
Right, yeah.
Held by a dead person. But I think, you know, yes, it does seem like this is the one area where we do well by animals. You know, we do love them and we think that they love us in return. And I like to think that my cat loves me. I don't know. And we feed them and we take care of them. But I think what's important to know about this is, and to sort of recognize, is that we don't, there's no protections for them necessarily in place if we didn't treat them well. Now, obviously, if we're abusing them, you know, there are certainly protections legally within that. But if we're not meeting their emotional needs, if, you know, and I know that sounds a bit sort of silly to say, but I think it's important to note that if we think that they have much, much more going on than we thought before, then if we're not able to successfully meet those needs, is it good for them? You know, if you have a dog that you take out, you know, on walks on the weekends, but he mostly stays at home during the day and he's probably kind of bored, like, is that good for him? Is that a good setup for him? And so I think the important thing also to know about this is that this isn't a kind of question that you ask if you don't care about animals. It's a question that you ask when you do care about animals and you want to make sure that you are doing right by them. So I think a lot of people, when they read the article, reacted sort of very emotionally, like, don't take my pets from me. You can't take my pets. But it's the kind of question that, you know, when you do love your pets, you do want to know that they're happy. But I think ultimately it's, you know, it's the question of like, can something be happy when it's owned? And we own pets, no matter how much we sort of want to, you know, fuss about the language, we do own them. They are ours. We can do with them almost what we want.
We're talking with journalist Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie about the ethics of having pets, of owning animals as pets. As science shows that most animals really have richer emotional and social lives than we had thought, is it right or wrong to keep them as our companion animals? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think of your pet as a person or equivalent to a person? Do you think it's ethically okay to keep animals as pets? If not, what's the alternative? What would need to change? Or are we doing animals a favor by helping them survive in an indoor warm environment? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up that conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with journalist Linda Rodriguez-McRobbie about the ethics of owning pets. As science shows that animals have more complex social and emotional lives than we used to think, is it wrong to keep them, to own them? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your answer to that question. And do you think of your pet as a person? Does your pet think it's people? Do you think it is ethically okay to keep animals as pets? Does it depend on how you treat them, how you interact with them? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Mike is on the line in Hartford. Mike, hi there.
Hi there. I just wanted to bring into the conversation a little bit that we're talking about dogs, and I think we need to contextualize it a little bit, only in the sense that the dogs that we have now are kind of a derived animal that we've more or less engineered to have certain characteristics that we desire. And in doing so, we've kind of bred out the, quote, natural, unquote, dog that existed before humans made them our little pets, as if it were. And so I think they've more or less become dependent upon us as much as we've become dependent upon them emotionally.
I think I get you. Thanks a lot for that that call, Linda. I mean, we've practiced artificial selection on dogs in particular over thousands of years, and the things they've been selected for, maybe herding behavior or things like that, chasing this and that, is what makes them happy now, whether that's what the original wolves were like or not.
Well, I think dogs are a really, really interesting case because a lot of people, and I think there's great evidence for how dogs have sort of co-evolved with us. But I think another really important point and thing to know about dogs is that, so there are over a billion dogs on this planet, but only about a quarter of them are pets. For the most part, most of the dogs on this planet live lives that are probably a bit closer to actually what original dogs would have been like. They're scavengers. They live on, you know, in rubbish dumps, and they live near people and kind of with people, but not as pets, definitely not as pets. And so I think it's interesting because in that way, they've kind of co-evolved with us in the same way that, you know, pigeons have or other animals that live in close proximity to humans, but are not pets. So I think, you know, when we think about dogs, and certainly in the Western world, we think about dogs and we think about them as being our pets because that's how we tend to relate to them. But this kind of co-evolutionary relationship that I think we have with them doesn't necessarily need to be a pet relationship. That co-evolution does not necessitate the relationship that we have with them. You know, so and it's interesting to think of other examples of animals that have co-evolved with us as well, where we would not consider them pets. I think rats and pigeons are great examples of animals that live in and have adapted themselves to humankind, but we wouldn't necessarily welcome them into our homes in the same way.
Mike, thanks a lot for calling in. We'll go next to Caroline in Racine. Caroline, hi.
Hi, Rob. how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
You know, I just wanted to say, there's no perfect storm, and there's no perfect system. We've all lived with animals for many, many years on different levels. But I feel the way, I have a 15-year-old standard poodle, and I've had a lot of dogs in my life, and she's happy as a clam. She's 15 and old. But if I didn't own her and take care of her, who would? So I just think that we have to make the point that I do think we're getting along better than people are in this world. So it's just my point. I understand the topic.
Caroline, thanks a lot for calling in. And when you talk to ethicists, Linda, who were raising these questions, and some of the people who had some of the most severe doubts about this, some of them still had pets and weren't going to, you know, release them into the wild or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, in some ways, it is a theoretical question, mm-hmm. right? Because we have pets, and there are, you know, billions of animals that are pets. How we treat them, how we act with them in the future, whether or not we continue to sort of have pets in the way that we do, I think it's kind of wrapped up in these questions. So, I mean, absolutely, you know, with our cat, I don't know what his life would be like without us. You know, we let him go outside and he does come back. So I think he might be happy. But it is a really important point and part of this conversation is that, well, actually, you know, we do have pets. And so we do have an obligation to the animals that are already in our care. But there are also some questions around that and how we have pets that I think, can be part of the conversation about whether we should have them. You know, it's interesting, when we talk about kind of, you know, keeping them inside or, you know, giving them a warm home and things like that. In the UK, it's a much less fraught conversation to have about if your cat goes outside or not. Most cats go outside. Whereas I think I understand in the States, people are a bit more concerned about the impact that their cats have on the environment and are a bit more concerned about, you know, songbird populations, but also about dangers to their own cats. So they keep them inside more. Well, which animal is happier? Which of these scenarios is considering the animal's happiness? And I don't know. You know, where that sort of falls out, but it's interesting to me to see that there are sort of, you know, cultural differences in terms of how we think of pet keeping and what we think of as sort of the best or most moral way to go about pet keeping.
We're talking to Linda Rodriguez McRobbie, talking about the ethics of owning pets. Some ethicists raising the question, should humans own animals? Back to your calls. Rick is on the line in Twin Lakes. Rick, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you think, Rick?
Like I said to your producer, I'm not my pet's owner. I'm my pet's protector. They're sentient creatures. They understand pain and fear. I'm just there to keep them safe.
Rick, thanks a lot for the call. And that reminds me, a question I wanted to ask, Linda, along the lines of what Rick is saying. Is there a way that we can use what we're learning about animals and their social and emotional lives to make the human-pet partnership work better, to be more in the animal's favor, to be more in accordance with their nature?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that we are learning more about them all the time in ways that can help people who want to make sure that their relationship with their pet and that their pets are happy. I mean, I think that a lot of the research that we're able to do now, you know, even down to if you're going to have a goldfish, what kind of life does your goldfish have? Knowing that they actually do feel a bit more than we think that they do. You know, the story about the turtles and the iPad, it was a bit of research that some animal behaviorists were doing with introducing iPads to turtles and just seeing what would happen. And the turtles seem to really dig the iPads. Like, you can evidently, one of the things you can tell whether a turtle is comfortable or not is how far it extends its head out. And it seemed to be really into it. So if that's the kind of thing that can, say, you know, help alleviate boredom in pets, help alleviate sort of some of the places where we might be deficient, then yeah, I mean, I think the stuff that we're learning about animals is going to simply inform how we treat them. And I think that's a really important sort of step that's been happening over the last 20 years or so.
Well, Linda, if I can ask a personal question of you, since you've been thinking about this and writing it, you have a cat now. Do you think you'll get another pet at some point in your life after looking into this issue?
Do you know, it's a really, really good question. I mean, certainly a lot of this has made me consider the ways in which I treat animals and treat the animals in my life. And, you know, I think one of the first steps before, we probably wouldn't get another cat, just because I think it wouldn't be fair to the cat that we have now. He seems pretty happy being an only cat. I think it would be kind of hard. I mean, we've also got two children, and that was pretty tough on him when they were born. But you know, one of the things that's made me think about is consuming animals for food. And I still eat meat, but I sort of have to think, like, why do I have a category of animal that equals pet and a category of animal that equals food? And that sometimes some of those, you know, they could be the same. Like, pigs are a great example. That is an overlapping category. And I find it sort of a bit weird and morally uncomfortable the more I think about it, that exists. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it may change the way I feel. It is changing the way I feel about sort of pet ownership and relationship to animals in general, I think.
We'll leave it there for now. Linda, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
We've been talking to Linda Rodriguez McRobbie. She wrote about the ethics of having pets in The Guardian. No time for you to call in now, but you can still share your thoughts. Do you have pets? Do you own pets? Do you consider yourself your pet's owner, companion, protector, as Rick, who called in, considers himself? Do you wonder about these gray areas our guest has been researching and looking into between having some pets, some animals as pets, some animals as food, some in overlapping categories? You can share your thoughts briefly at the Central Time Twitter feed at Central Time WPR, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And also be sure to look for the new, relatively new now, Ideas Network Facebook page. All great ways to share your thoughts on anything we talk about here on Central Time.